Sue. Very grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups today because I love an alcoholic. And I want to thank Kira and the Al-Anon committee for inviting me to participate in this convention. And I want to commend y'all on doing a great job. This feels like a convention is supposed to feel. Thank you very much. The neat part is that it seems to me that the focus is back on the program and that fun is just a byproduct of this way of life. And it's one of the best conventions I've been to in Southern California in a long time. I woke up this morning overwhelmed with gratitude. Number one, last night we got to hear a great speaker, John Kay. He's my husband's sponsor. And then my husband invited me to go with him and his sponsor to dinner. And God, for my husband to want me to do something like that with him, it was overwhelming to me. I love him so much, sober. And I don't ever forget that every sober day is a gift in our home. And then I thought about all of our friends, all the people that are here this weekend, because Keith and I absolutely did not have any friends when we got to this program. And the only word that I know how to use to explain it is abundance. We have an abundance of love and abundance of friends today because of this program. And without this program, it all goes away. It all goes away. And, you know, didn't you guys enjoy John last night? Wasn't he dynamite? He is so funny. We were brand new in the program, and I heard him talking to my husband, and I heard him say, if you keep on drinking, you'll end up like me, and I quit right away. But I love alcoholics, and I watched everybody move the room a while ago, and I don't think there's any greater love than one alcoholic for another. And I see it in rooms like this all the time. And it's a very special thing that I get to see. And I love it. I love the loyalty that alcoholics have to each other and the compassion and love they have for each other. I love the loyalty and the compassion that Al-Anon has taught me to have with my husband. Yeah. It wasn't always that way. It was kind of like, I used to be very revengeful. And I was like this lady, she was going shopping and she went in this hardware store and there was this fuzzy thing laying on the counter. And she asked the guy in there, the clerk, what is that? He says, that's a burger. She says, you're kidding. He goes, no. She said, it's so cute, I want it. He said, no, it won't do anything that a woman tells it to do. She said, good, I want it. He said, no, lady, I don't understand. He said, watch. And he goes, burger, curtains. And it jumped up on the curtains, and it just ripped the curtains up. She goes, good, I want it. And he said, it won't do what you say. She said, try it. And so she goes, burger, curtains. Just sit there. She goes, great, I want it. He said, no, why would you want it? He said, look, burger, carpet. And it gets down on the carpet and just disintegrates the carpet. He said, see there, it only does what men say. She goes, I want it. He said, why would you want that? She goes, you don't understand. My husband's a drunk, and he does not pay attention to me at all. And I'm going to go home, and I'm going to take that burger home, and I'm going to set it up on our coffee table. And he's going to look at me, and he's going to say, what is that? And she said, I'm going to say, it's a burger. And he's going to go, burger my ass. that's just a little bit the way I was before I got here. Yeah. There's this little gal sitting in a bar, and this really does describe me. And she's sitting there just minding her own business, and this guy comes in, and he walks in, and he looks at the bartender, and he slaps a $100 bill down on the counter, and he said, I want a bottle of Jack Daniels, and don't ever let it go dry. And the bartender said, well, looks like you're going to hang on one heck of a drunk. He said, I am. I just got out of prison. And the bartender said, what were you in there for? And he said, killing my wife. And the bartender goes, whoa, you know, and he takes off to go get the bottle of Jack Daniels. And the little girl looks at this guy, and she goes down, and she sits on the empty bar stool next to him. She goes, so, I hear you're single. And that's what happened to me. So, what a neat day. What a neat day. It's already been great. We had morning meditation in Chuck and Kathy's room this morning. Thank you for letting us use your room. We had about 50 ladies in there doing morning meditation together. And in the big book it says, ask friends to join you. And we did. And afterwards, one of the ladies I sponsor said, Sue, I need for you to talk to me and my sponsoree, because if somebody doesn't talk to us, I'm going to kill her. I said, no problem. And that was probably the best meeting in the whole convention. And then a while ago, one of our newcomers came in defiant, didn't buy a luncheon ticket. But somebody gave her a roll, and I said, it's nice that you came to break bread with us. And I love those kind of newcomers. You know, just like the ones John was talking about last night. And I love working with newcomers. They light up my life. Literally light up my life. And for a person that came from where I came from, to even care about anybody else is a miracle in my life. And I believe that my God loved me enough. He couldn't get my attention. And he loved me enough that he knew that I was going down a path of destruction. And therefore he put an alcoholic in my life. So I could do everything that I had to do in order to find you, in order to find my God. And I am so grateful today. And I believe that those of us that are lucky enough to make it to these rooms owe our God a tremendous debt of gratitude for giving us a second chance at this life and giving us the steps. I'll be so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for recognizing that the families of were just sick as the alcoholics. When Keith was new in the program, he was secretary of a meeting down at the Anaheim Milano Club, and we used to get up and get dressed every Sunday morning, like that was our church. And we'd go down there, and our daughter and I would get behind the counter, and we'd be serving coffee to all these sober alcoholics. And they would say, what are you doing behind that counter? You're not an alcoholic. You're an Al-Anon. And I said, I need to be here. And they go, no, you didn't drink. You're not as sick as us. And I'd go, you bet I am. And I'd argue with alcoholics that I was sicker than them. And they finally accepted us. I said, you know, you don't ever have to go in a bar or a liquor store ever again if you don't want to. I sleep with my obsession. Try that one on. Tough. It's not easy. And, you know, I love the people in this program. The ladies that get to Al-Anon or the gentlemen that get to Al-Anon that still live with practicing drugs and the program that they work. I don't ever take sobriety for granted in my home. But I sponsor a lady that shared the other night in our meeting. And it's so typical of a drunk. And she'd always want to go on boat cruises, go on boat rides, and all that kind of stuff. And she'd shared with him that in a few weeks that, you know, our family's going to be together in Italy, and they'll probably be on a gondola somewhere. And it was her birthday. And her husband, when she got this program, was pass out on the floor, in the living room floor, drunk. And so the other night she went home, and it was her birthday. He met her with a flower. He said, "Close your eyes. I want to show you something." And he took her out back to the swimming pool that they have that hadn't been cleaned forever. And he got in this little boat from somewhere. And he said, "Baby, you've always wanted to go on a boat ride." And he rowed her around their swimming pool in that little boat. Yeah. Only a drunk can think of that. Only a drunk. Only somebody in their not right mind. But isn't it loving? Isn't that loving? I was told when I was in this program that I would if I would try to love with all the intensity that I used to hate with, that I'd be okay. And I am so grateful for strong sponsorship. And I've tried to do that the best of my ability. And because of that, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can see the gifts in those kind of drunks today. I can see the gifts in the things that my husband used to do for me. And still does. It is so funny. We are so still a lot of ways like we used to be. Keith can plant a seed, and I'm off and running. And he wanted a new headboard. We'd had our bed set forever. About a week ago, he said, "I'm tired of this old bed. It's ratty and it's falling apart and blah, blah, blah. And we need a new headboard, and I want one with bookshelves in it." Okay. And boy, did I find one. It only took about 15 furniture stores. And then I finally found a furniture factory through one of the girls that I sponsored told me about this place. And I go there. And the neat part was is that Keith went with me to look at it. And I said, "Do you like it?" And he said, "Yes," because we never shop together. And I said, "Why do you like this one?" He says, "Because we're here." I mean, I can get as obsessed, and John talked about it last night, that thing's out to get us all the time. I can get just as obsessed with something like that as anything else. And so for a week, I'd been obsessed with finding this headboard. And we get it, and they're delivering it that night, and all the arrangements are made, and I get home, and I take my messages off the phone. And there was a message from a lady that we've known about 10 years in this program. This lady's tried to work a program for as long as I've known her. But she has never been 100% in Al-Anon. She's tried other programs. She's still trying psychiatry, chemistry through better medicine, the whole bit. And she calls me all the time and leaves messages on my answering machine. And she's always up. And I took her message off and she said, "God, so I'm so excited. They," meaning social workers, "have finally found me a home for assisted living that I can go into. I don't have to live in my car anymore." And she's been living in her car for the last 4 months. And she said, "I'll have toiletry facilities and I won't have to wear diapers anymore because I'm homeless." And I said, "Thank you, God. Thank you, God, for me bringing me right back to why I'm here and what's real and what's our purpose." I just spent a week obsessed with a headboard and this lady's excited because she doesn't have to sleep in her car anymore. That's how easy we go. And God always knows how to get to me, to bring me right back where I'm supposed to be. And that's what this whole thing is about. It's about recognizing what we're dealing with. This is a deadly disease. It It leads to insanity or death, and you do not even have to drink alcohol to get there. And that's why it's so hard sometimes with Al-Anons, because you can't smell them. And denial is so great. And what do you give up? What do you give up? It's very obvious with alcoholics. But the good news is that we have the disease of alcoholism, the AAs have the disease of alcoholism, and I believe that once the alcoholics give up the booze, you're an Al-Anon, just like me. Because then we have all of the issues to work on. Same ones. And thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous for giving us the 12 steps. When I started working this program, and my sponsor started me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, because you see, Al-Anon doesn't have them. AA gave us your steps. And I wondered why they left, "I am powerless over alcohol," in the steps for the Al-Anons. I wasn't powerless over alcohol. I could take it or leave it. I didn't like it anyway. And I wouldn't drink if I didn't want to. So why did they leave that in there? And it says, dash, our life is unmanageable. And I knew my life was unmanageable. I knew that I was a second-rate citizen. I knew that I didn't count. I knew that I was dumb and I was stupid. Because, you see, alcoholism had been telling me that for years. But how was I powerless over alcohol? And I love reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is not Al-Anon conference approved literature, and I know that. And I'm going to tell you something that a long-timer told me. If you're an Al-Anon, you don't have to read that book. You can stay sick if you want to. Because our Al-Anon literature tells us to learn everything we can about the disease of alcoholism. And what a better place to find it than the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so in considering that step, I had to write a lot. And I like to write. And I like to go beyond. I don't want to be a surface. I don't want to be half measures. I was never half measures before I got here. And I don't want to be half measures with this program. And I want to know why about me. Not the alcoholic, me. I want to grow. I want to understand this thing. Where do I fit in this world? Where do I fit in this program? What is my responsibility? And I did my writing and I gave it to my sponsor, and I'm giving it to my sponsor, and the lights went on. Because I'd read that big book. I am powerless over alcohol because I tried to change what alcohol was doing to my husband. And I am powerless. And it made me insane. I didn't grow up in an alcoholic home, so what's a lady like me doing in a place like this? Because you were telling me that once you were attracted to the alcoholic personality, you would always be attracted to the alcoholic personality. And a lot of you have multiple marriages. Keith got me and he was stuck. It's divorce or dead. You got choices. And I love him being sober. I tell him, you know, I know that if you go out and drink it, then you might end up dead because I'm right behind you and the butcher knife's still sharp. Because I don't ever want us to trade in. And I got to go through those steps with my sponsor and find out some things about me. And one of the things that I found out about me is I'm very stubborn. And that seventh step says that we give all of our defects of character to God. So what's left? I turn that over and I work on the positive side of it. I am so stubborn. I do not want this disease to get me twice. I refuse to let this disease get me twice. I'm going to be stubborn enough to have myself in a seat as often as possible to keep that disease arrested. I'm going to make those phone calls as often as possible, not once a week. In May, I'll have 27 years in this program of Al-Anon, and I talk to my sponsor no less than twice a week. Because I always need to hear what she has to say. I love the long-timers in this program and how strong they gave it away to me in the very beginning. Because they said, you can't afford to do it any other way. We don't care if we hurt your feelings. You know how to handle that. We're here to save your life. And I'm grateful for those people in my life and the long-timers that walk before us and set the pace. And I believe that our responsibility to those people is to give it away exactly the way they gave it to us and not water this thing down. We have a tremendous responsibility to the new people walking in this door that this convention is not about karaoke. This convention is not about the dance. It's not about the decorations. That's only a byproduct of being right here in a meeting, whether it's marathon or speaker meeting or whatever. And if you go to a marathon meeting and somebody's running crap out, shut them up. Why get sick with them? You have the right. If you have the knowledge, you have the responsibility. That's what I was told. And I gave some of the girls direction in our after our morning meditation this morning about people walking in and out of this meeting. And they had Gotawana, my home group name, on their tag. And they were walking in and out of here when everybody at this head table had 30-plus years. And I said, they deserve the respect of you sitting your ass in that chair and stay there until that meeting's over. Because those are the people that set the pace for us. And it's very rude and disrespectful to run in and out of this room. And it's the same way in our local meetings. I was taught when I was new, you get to a meeting 30 minutes before the meeting so you can get your coffee and go to the bathroom and find your seat. And then you stay after the meeting 30 minutes so you can talk to other people and get to know people and meet people during the break. And I was told to sit down and shut up and listen. I got very strong direction when I was new. I had a lot of humbling experiences when I was new. It is not easy being a newcomer because everybody picks on you, huh, Brett? We think. And the neat part is that they're not picking on us when we're new. They're trying to teach us things that the disease of alcoholism took away. We all have the knowledge of being courteous, polite, respectful. But when alcoholism came into my life, that went out the window. You're on your own. I have no time for you. My focus is on him. And you get in my way and you die. Because that's alcoholism. And like I said, I didn't grow up in a home with alcoholism. Pretty normal home. We moved all over Western Kansas, Oklahoma, in Texas Panhandle. And we lived in a trailer house, and my dad followed the oil rigs around. We was in the oil fields, and I was called oil field trash a lot. And I went to 5 and 6, 7 schools in 1 year and never felt like I belonged anywhere. And so if I wanted attention, I had to make it. Negative or positive, I didn't care. But if you got in my way, I'll let you know about it. Because I had to make my own. Nobody stood up for me or any of that kind of stuff. And When I was a teenager, 15 years old, my father passed away with cancer. And that left my mother and my younger brother at home together. My sister had already gotten married and had her family. And after a period of time, my mom started dating, and I resented her for that. She's been disloyal to my father. And I started rebelling, and I ended up in an unwed mother's home in San Antonio, Texas. And I stood there for a period of time, and I gave a child up for adoption. And today I'm very grateful that I did that, because at that age, no way was I ready, willing, or able to be responsible or be a parent. And I heard something in there I never heard again until I found you. God uses people to help other people. And she said that God had used me as an instrument to help some people have a child that they couldn't have. And I accepted that, and I went back home, and I didn't like running around with the kids that I'd run around with. They were boring. And my mom asked me one night if I wanted to go to this honky-tonk with her, and I said, you bet. And I get there, and oh my gosh, I'll never forget it. I walked in, and it's noisy, it's rowdy, people are fighting, the music is loud, people are cussing and smoking, and whoa, I'm home. I loved it. And I watched this cowboy move the room, and I thought he had a lot of courage to do the stuff he was doing. He was starting fights. And pretty soon he started to fight, and he came running past me, and he said, honey, let me know when the fight's over. And he took him to the woman's restroom. And I stood there like a good potential Al-Anon on duty. And when the fight was over, I said, okay, cowboy, you can come out. And he came out and he asked me for the last dance. And the last dance was usually a slow dance where you could rub up against each other and get ready to go home. But this was a fast dance. And it just kept getting faster and faster and faster. And we never missed a lick. And I loved it. I loved it. And as I look back, I know today that he did for me what nothing else had ever done for me. He got me in downtown in the fast lane right now. He did for me probably what alcohol does for alcoholics. But you see, he's my drug of choice. And he calls me up the next day and asks me out on a date. And my mom said, no, you're not going with him. He's in trouble all the time. He's been married before, and he's older than you. And I said, I don't care. And he came to pick me up, and we walk outside, and there's no car. And I said, now, wait a minute. My dates pick me up in cars. He said, you don't understand. I've lost my driver's license forever, and I totaled my car. And I go, no problem. I got a car. And I took him to the drive-in movie. I knew exactly where to go and what to do. You sit there and you kiss and smooch and steam up the windows. And I looked over at Keith, and we're watching the movie, and I'm going, well, this must be what it's like to be with a more mature man. I looked over at him, and he's got a six-pack of beer sitting between his legs. He's more interested in than me. And that set up that obsession. I want to be number one in that man's life. And that about killed me for the next 15 years, trying to be number one in that man's life. We started dating, and there's times he wouldn't show up. And I'd think, he doesn't know who he's talking to, the self-righteousness that came up in me. And I got to tell him, and I got to let him know he can't treat me this way. And so he'd call me the next day, and I'd go, where were you last night? And he'd go, well, I don't know. Why? And I said, because we were supposed to have a date. He goes, no problem, I'll pick you up tonight. And I'd say, okay. And then I get really mad because I didn't tell him all the stuff I was going to tell him, and how will he know if I don't tell him? And I thought, well, I'll just show him. And so I'd chug a lug a few beers before he got there, and I'd show him what it felt like. And he'd walk in my house, and he'd look at me, and he'd go, well, you're not going. And I'd go, why not? And he said, because you're drunk. I said, well, I go with you when you're drunk. He goes, I know, you hang out with drunks, I don't. And we did stuff like that all the time. We used to go across the Oklahoma Panhandle into Kansas, and because you could drink up there at 18. I wasn't 18 yet, but he was. And we'd go in those honky-tonks up there. One night we got in a fight because he wasn't paying enough attention to me. Now I know how to make a man pay attention to me. You flirt with another guy. And when he sees the other guy paying attention to you, then he'll go, oh yeah, you know, I got to pay attention to her. I did not know that alcoholics work in opposites. He just got angry and we had this big fight and fighting over who's going to drive home. And he won. And so we get in the car and we start back across the Oklahoma Panhandle. We get the state line and they have radar set up there and he's mad and we're going 100 miles an hour. And he goes, my gosh, if they catch me, I'll never see the sun again. I said, no problem, I've never had a ticket. So we switched places in that car going 100 miles an hour. There's nothing wrong with me. And so we get down the other end of the state line and they had a roadblock set up for us and the highway patrol came up the window and he said, we don't know how you got under the wheel of this car because you weren't back under there when we clocked you. But we've checked on this car and it's been reported stolen. So we're taking you in. And Keith smarted off to him and they handcuffed him. And they told me to follow the sheriff's car 40 miles to the county seat so they could arrest me. So I did. And we're sitting there and they're fingerprinting and booking me. And they said, you can make one phone call. Keith said, I want to speak to the district attorney. And I thought, whoa, I am being booked and fingerprinted. And I'm thinking, wow, this man goes to the top. I am so impressed. Alcoholics just have a way of doing that with us. And pretty soon, this guy walked in and he was mature gray hair and had on a winter coat with a fur collar turned up. And he was so cool. And I was immediately attracted to him today. I know it's because he's an alcoholic. And he introduced me to my father-in-law. So for the first year we dated, I was in custody to my future father-in-law. And we started out this happy road of destiny. We dated for 2 years. My girlfriends were talking about their boyfriend, how they would come over and watch TV with them, and their boyfriends would dote over him, and they'd sit on the couch, and they'd smooch and kiss, and how wonderful that was. Well, my boyfriend was coming over, and he was falling asleep. I didn't understand, pass out. And that would make me so angry. Keith had long hair and a long beard, and I did not like it. And so one night he came over and passed out on me, and I took a razor, I shaved Happy's head and Happy's face off. He came back the next night and he looked the same. And we'd go drag Main Street. It was back when you drug Main Street. We'd go down Main Street one way, and he'd turn this way, and he'd be clean-shaven and look cool this way. And we'd go down, he'd be long-haired and this way. And he'd say, people in this town think I'm two-faced. And I'd just laugh and giggle, and I'd think he was so cute. He was. He was my entertainment, boy. And he got a draft notice, and we decided we couldn't live without each other. And so we ran off to Amarillo and we got married. And then Uncle Sam didn't want him, so I got to keep him. And his grandparents and I decided that what he needed was to go back to school. He'd been going to school many years, never got a degree, because he just went from one school to another and that kind of stuff. And I knew that I had what it took to make him stay put. And so we moved to Stillwater, Oklahoma, and Keith enrolled in college again. And shortly after that, we had our little girl, Simone. And I remember when they handed me that baby, thinking, thank God she's a girl. Because, you see, Keith was a drunk, his dad was a drunk, and his granddad was the town drunk. I knew if we had a boy, he would carry on the family tradition. I did not know that alcoholism doesn't care what sex, color, race, or creed you are. It will take you to the gates of insanity and hell, and you don't even have to drink booze to get there. And we stayed in that town, and many times Keith would come home. He'd say, Sue, I just need to go out and have two beers. Because after a while, I started working. These folks were paying for his schooling, and I was working, and I was paying for rent and buying the groceries, and Keith was just going to school. Which was enough. He said, this is too humbling for me. I just need to go out and have two beers. And I'd say, but you always get in trouble when you do that. And he'd say, I won't this time, I promise. And he'd go out, and the doorbell would ring after a few hours, and I'd go to the door, and there'd be Keith and a cop. And they'd say, if you'll keep him here this time, we won't arrest him. And so it's like everybody was giving him to me. It's like he was my responsibility, and I started taking that responsibility very seriously. And we stayed there for 4 years so Keith could get a 2-year degree, typical alcoholic. And I took all the credit. Because, you see, alcoholism had started telling me that I was nobody, that I didn't count, that I was stupid. And the alcoholism in me started believing it. And he came home one day and said, babe, I want to move to California. And I said, no, I'm not moving to California. It's too wild and crazy out there. I will never raise children in California. He said, babe, you do not understand. We have been going to these honky-tonks. You've been drinking out of paper sacks. You've been getting in fights. I mean, I got in fights in those bars, too. I mean, I would go to the bathroom. We'd be dancing, and I'd say, I got to go to the ladies' room. You go sit in that booth and stay there. Don't fight. It's dumb. And I don't want to catch you fighting when I come out. And he'd go, okay. And I come out of the restroom. There's a big fight going on in the middle of the dance floor. And I go, darn him. I push my way through all those guys, and I get right in the middle. Somebody'd sock me in the face, and I'd fall down on the floor, and they're picking me up, and they're going, where did she come from? And I'd look over, and Keith be sitting in the booth. Yeah. You never know. You can never predict an alcoholic. Yeah. A girl flirts with my man. There was this gal one time, she was flirting with Keith, and boy, she really upset me. You don't bother my man. Her and I got in a fight, and I threw her through a plate glass window, cut half of her face off. About 6 weeks later, she came back and said, look what you did to me. They had to take skin off my hip to put my face back together. No compassion, no caring, nothing. I said, wow, you got a new name. Your new name's Buttface. And that's what everybody started calling her after that. Yeah. And it's like, you don't mess with me or mine. I'm so grateful that Al-Anon teaches us release. I do not own another human being. And you see, the thing about that I understand, and that people, long-timers in this program, have taught me. Elsa Chamberlain used to tell a story about the little bird in the hand. And she said, if a bird flies in your hand and you close it like this, it will suffocate and it will surely die. But if you love it with an open hand, it will fly away, and if it's meant to be, it will come back. And you see, I was the one that I was suffocating. And it's negative, and it pushes people away. It makes them hate me as much as I hate him. I didn't understand those things. I thought I was helping. I thought I was fixing. I didn't have a clue that you can't fix alcoholism. We moved to California and the disease progressed and it got worse. And I don't ever want to forget that. Keith would go out and he'd come home and I'd be right at the door. Don't you ever do that again to us. And I'd be yapping and yelling and screaming and shaking the finger and all of that kind of stuff. And he'd say, Sue, get out of my face. And I'd take one step closer and I'd just be letting him have it. And he'd say, Sue, if you don't get out of my face, I'm going to hit you. And I'd take one step closer and he'd hit me and the knockdown dragout fight was on. And we'd fight until the last man could stand. Because, you see, I had to prove that I was right. My God, that almost killed me. When we got this program, our daughter went to Alateen. And when her and I'd start fussing, she'd say, you're right, Mom, you're right first. God, I hated that. But it was the principle. And she was letting me know, in her own way with program, that I'm not always right. Today I know I'm not always right. But with the disease and being so insane and caught up in the insanity, I know there's one more thing I can do. Go on scavenger hunts, throw out the bottles, bust them, fill them up with water. He got drunk on water a lot. All that stuff. Try to do the right thing. Buy the right glasses. Teach an alcoholic how to drink. If we drink out of these glasses, he won't get drunk. If we get along, you know, how can we do this? You know, get up on Sunday morning or Saturday morning and say, okay, I'm going to be a good wife. Can't lick them, join them. We'll have Bloody Marys with breakfast. Oh, my God. That started off a weekend that ended up in jail time. If I wasn't calling the cops, the neighbors were calling the cops, or Simone was calling the cops, because we'd get in fights by Saturday night. It was living hell at our house. And I just wanted to teach him how to drink right. And we fought with guns and knives all the time. One time I was having a fight with a gun, and I didn't get to my butcher knife in time. And I just had the holster. And I was beating the heck out of Keith with this holster. And he went out in the garage, and I'm following him out there, and I'm banging him with this holster. And the neighbors had called the cops. And they drive up to our house, and they go, you know, where's the gun? I said, I don't know. He's got the gun. And they go, no, all of the commotion that's going on here, you have the holster. And I said, no, this is my weapon. And they go, yeah, right. So I had to give them a demo. And they put the handcuffs on me. Well, and God, unreal. Send him to jail and go write hot checks to bail him out of jail. That's same. But it was the only time that I ever could ever get any sleep was when he was in jail. The only time. Keith Ann from Texas fought with a gun all the time, and it's like, you don't do that to me, I'll show you. And I picked up a butcher knife and I started fighting back with that butcher knife. Many, many times having a fight with that gun and knife. He'd put that gun right on the end of my nose. He'd say, "Sit, if you don't shut up, I'm going to shoot you." And I'd stick my knife right in his stomach, and I'd say, "You go first." He'd go, "What do you mean you go first? If I shoot you, you're dead." And I said, "I know, but when the bullet hits me, it'll make me go backwards, and the momentum will make the knife go forwards, and we'll both die at the same time, so go for it." And he'd look at me, and he'd go, "You're crazy." And I was. Yeah. We had a big fight one night, and I fell down, and I was always going to get a divorce. And I got the whole side of my face kicked in, and I went to work that day, and everybody says, "Does your husband beat you?" And I said, "No, if he ever laid a hand on me, I'd leave him." Because you see, the denial of the disease, if I admit it out loud, I got to do something about it, and I have no answers. So I got to deny it, and I got to make up a lie. And then I got to make up another lie. And then I got to make up another lie. And some of them were so good, I believed them myself. And so this time at noon, I went across the hall to this attorney. And he looked at me and he said, "My gosh, Sue, what happened to you?" And for the first time, I said, "Keith and I had a fight." He said, "Does it beat you like this all the time?" And I said, "No, only when he drinks." He hadn't seen Keith yet. He said, "Do you think he's an alcoholic?" And I said, "I don't know what one is." He said, "That's somebody that can't stop drinking." And then he said the magic words to me. Because you see, I thought if Keith just left us enough, he could quit drinking. It doesn't have anything to do with love. You see, I've read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know that it's an obsession of the mind. And I know that it's a physical craving. And I need to know those things because I'm not an alcoholic. I need to understand that the first drink gets him drunk. That's why I don't ever want to be a bad example of having booze in my home with a sober alcoholic living there. I don't ever want to be my husband's excuse for picking up a drink ever again. I stopped drinking when we were new in this program because it's not supporting sobriety. And I don't sponsor anybody that does. Would you go up to a kid that had sugar diabetes and look a sucker in front of him? I don't think so. I believe in support and sobriety. So anyway, when that attorney told me, if you love him, why don't you take him to Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, what is that? And he said, that's a place where people go to quit drinking. Oh my God, I had an answer. I loved it. So I went home that night after work, and Keith was laying on the couch, and I get my butcher knife, and I go over, and I jab him, and I said, get up. He said, what for? I said, you're going to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. He said, I don't think so. I said, yeah, I think you are. And he told me before then, he said that he had called a man in AA, because I told him I'd been to the attorney, and the attorney had told me about that. And he said, you know, I talked to a man in AA today, and he told me, well, there's a meeting just right down here from our house. See, I wanted to believe he loved us enough. I didn't know he'd been to court that day and was on a court card. I wanted to think it was us. It was me. Me. So when he wouldn't get off of that couch, I went and got my butcher knife. He respected my butcher knife. There have been many times he'd pass out on me when I was talking to him, and you don't ignore me when I'm talking to you. And I'd take that butcher knife and I'd just stab him all over his back, saying, God, please let me do away with this. I didn't know that this that I was talking about was the disease of alcoholism. And then it's like all of a sudden I'd come to and I'd see what I was doing to him, and it's like, oh my God, what am I doing? This is the man I'm supposed to love. And I'd lay down and cry myself to sleep, and the next morning he'd wake up and he'd go, oh my God, see, something's wrong with my back. And I'd say, well, let me see. And he'd turn around, I'd peel his t-shirt up, and I'd say, you've been drinking all that rock gut whiskey, you've broken out with acne of the back. But I'll fix it, honey. Let me get the rubbing alcohol. And I loved it. So that night when he was on the couch and I took my butcher knife and said, you're going to AA, he got up. And so he showed me where that meeting was. And when we got over there, there's a big AA sign out in the front. I said, what time is this meeting over? He said, 10 o'clock. I said, I'll tell you something, dude. You come out of that door before 10 o'clock, I'll gut you. Now, when I got Tylenol, you told me I couldn't keep a drunk sober, but I did for 4 months sitting in that parking lot every Monday night with my butcher knife. The sad part was, there was an Al-Anon meeting in that church the exact same time. But you see, I hadn't gotten to the want to, and I hadn't hit a bottom. And I believe that every Al-Anon has to hit a bottom just like every alcoholic. And I know that this program today is for people who want it, not for people who need it. There's a lot of people that need this program, but they just don't want it right now. And I had to get to the want to. Keith was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for the next 4 years, and it was total living hell in our home. And I know that a lot of you know what I'm talking about. I don't ever want to go back to that insanity. I don't ever want to forget the last drunk in our home. I don't ever want to forget that butcher knife and that gun. Because if I forget, I will return. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that our past is our greatest asset. We do not shut the door on it. Neither do we dwell on it. And I can't forget who I am and where I came from. I had no fear when I did my inventory with my sponsor. Did the fear list. I had one fear. And it scared the hell out of me. It was none. I was not afraid of nothing. And then she had me do some more writing. And what came out of that inventory is, because I had to dig deep, is that I was afraid of the unknown. I had no faith. And that's why I had to try to control and manipulate everything. And I know today that there's a God in our life and we don't have to worry. Like our book says, you know, if you worry, why pray? If you pray, why worry? And I know that we had to do everything that we had to do. And that last drunk, I remember standing there in our home, and Keith and I had had the fight. And we always, when one of us was done with the fight, the other one always turned on Simone, our little girl, and took it out on her. And she was so beat down when we got here. Chin on her chest and her hair in her face, hiding from everybody. Paranoid. Scared of everybody. She couldn't trust her parents. Why could she trust anybody else? I remember standing there looking at Keith and thinking, I don't love him anymore. But I don't hate him either. I just felt numb. And I looked at Keith and I said, I don't love you anymore, but I don't hate you either. And if you got to become a skid row bum, because that's what I thought happened to drunks, then that's what you got to do. But we ain't going any further with you. I don't know where that came from. There had to be a God in my life. But I know that we have to go as far as we have to go, and we got to do whatever we got to do in order to get desperate enough to say the two magic words that still work in my life today. Help me. Magic words. The answer to every problem we have. And Simone and I left that house for the last time. We stayed gone for 4 days. I do not remember what happened in those 4 days. Simone begged me to take her back home, get stuff for school. I had 12 years in this program before I knew what it was that Simone needed to go home for, because I was so obsessed with a drunk. She was trying out for cheerleading the next day. And I was such a good mother, I knew exactly what was going on with my daughter. Bless her heart. Thank God for her program. She's been able to forgive me for those kind of things. And if you work a program, your children will forgive you too. And if you make your children go to Alateen like we did ours, they will forgive you and love you. Because they need answers just as much as we do. And when Simone and I went back home that night, we were afraid because we didn't know what we'd find. And we walked in there, and it was pitch black dark, and we looked around till we found Keith in the back bedroom face down. We thought he was dead, so we kicked him. And he turned over and he said to me, Sue, please help. And I know for sure that this is when God came into my life, and he gave me the power to say the one word, the most important word, that we can ever say to those that we love who drink. No. No. If you want help, you help yourself. And Keith got up off the floor and made some phone calls for himself. Thank God. You see, in every open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I go to, they read out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And right after the steps, it has the ABCs. It says, no human power can relieve our alcoholism. I think they're talking about the non-alcoholic. And that God could and would if he were sought. I believe once I got out of the way and took off my God suit and let God and booze do for my husband what I could never do, he reached out for himself. And I'll forever be grateful. A little bitty man showed up at our house, and I thought, Jesus, why don't they send the big ones on these trips? And that little man's still in our life today, and he's very special. Because that little man saved a family. He did the classic 12-step call that they talk about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He took the time to share with the family of... And he asked me to go with him to take Keith to a detox, and I did, and Keith checked himself in, and he took me back home. And he sat in the driveway with me, And he said, I've seen Keith around AA for a while, but something's happened to him. I can see it in his eyes. And I think he wants this thing this time, but he'll never make it coming home to an old idea, and you're an old idea. And today I can say I've seen it happen many times. That a sober alcoholic living in an environment that they used to drink in will end up drunk again, or they will have to leave to maintain their sobriety. There has to be the family support. That's why Al-Anon is called Al-Anon Family Groups, because it includes Alateen. It includes the families of alcoholics. And he went in the house and he told Simone if she loved her daddy that she would go to a program called Alateen, and she did. She hated us for a year and a half because we made her go. She didn't want to go. She didn't like going. And my sponsor said, she hates you already. Let her hate you for something positive. Why would you be so selfish as to not give your child the answers that you have found here yourself? They work the same 12 steps too. And they can relate one-on-one like you relate one-on-one with an Al-Anon, or alcoholics relate one-on-one. We can't help our kids. Only our kids can help each other. That's why I thought it was so cool this morning that the Alateens took a group conscience to have a closed meeting and get their parents out of there. Good for you guys. You have your own program. Fix yourselves. Your moms will ruin you. But we carry this message home. And we carry it. And we carry it. And we carry it. Because this is the answer. All the amends have been made in our home because we've all applied the steps. If I left this program of Al-Anon today, my husband wouldn't have anything to do with me, and neither would my daughter. And I would never see my granddaughter again. She has told us that. Keith has told me that. By the same token, if Keith ever drank again, I'd be out of there in a heartbeat, because I cannot imagine as violent and mean as either one of us was over 26 years ago, what we would be like today if we returned to that insanity. I would not want to stick around to find out. I know this is a progressive disease, and the only thing that arrests it is these 12 steps and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, and Alateen. I'm of service in any way I can be. I am of service because I have a tremendous debt. We're beginning to, we're going to have a miracle kind of thing in our life in a few weeks. Years ago, our daughter moved to Italy to become a model, and she very instrumental in doing a lot of things for Al-Anon over in Italy and helping Alcoholics Anonymous translate literature and all kinds of stuff. One night, years ago, she couldn't find an alcoholic in her area to take a 12-step call. And this lady that she sponsors and her husband was reaching out. And I laid in bed beside my husband, and I heard my husband tell my daughter what to say to this guy. She was translating. Keith would talk on the phone to this guy, and then Simone would translate what he was saying. Because she knew her dad would not resist a 12-step call. That's how much she loves us today. We are a family because of the 12 steps of this program. Because we've applied them to our lives. We live them. We don't just read them. We don't just talk about them. We live them. And because of that, we have a family today. And And because of that, on the 31st of this month, we are going to Italy. And we are going to go over there to experience AA and Al-Anon and Alateen that our daughter helped initiate over there. A byproduct of that is that we get to enjoy our granddaughter. We get to meet our in-laws. Now, I've been over there twice before. I got to go over there. Simone started a women's conference. She asked her mother to share. Then I got to go over there and be a mother when my daughter had our granddaughter. Keith's never been. The other day on the phone, our granddaughter, she calls him Pappy. And I was talking to Simone, our granddaughter, and she goes, our granddaughter goes, where's Pappy? I said, he's here. You want to talk to him? She goes, see? I said, okay, let me get him. I said, you want to talk to Granny some more? She goes, no. You see, he's charmed her like alcoholics charm us. And he got on the phone with her. She goes, Pappy, you come to Milano? What a miracle. And you know why we get to go and how it's going to work? Keith and I are going over there, and so is Reuben. Reuben's going with us because Keith doesn't want to be alone with two Al-Anons over there. He needs the love and support of alcoholics no matter where he is. And that's why I love him. He'll be there with alcoholics in Italy, but he won't be able to understand most of what they say. And he wants an alcoholic there that he can communicate with. And Reuben volunteered to go. Now you might say that's kind of weak, but I'm excited as hell about it because, you see, my husband knows how to protect his sobriety and how to take care of it. And I don't resent it. And they were saying the other day, Reuben said, should I get a rent car? And he said, well, no, we're not getting one because it's too wild and crazy to drive over there. And you might get tired of the family thing with us and Simone and her in-laws and stuff, and you might want to go somewhere. Reuben goes, no, I don't think so. You know, and Keith said, has it ever dawned on you we might get tired of you? And because it's another alcoholic, we can be open and honest with each other. Yeah. That's love. That's not rejection. That's love. Honesty is love. When I got to this program, I was brutally honest. Brutally honest. And my sponsor told me I had to soften up. That love without truth is brutality. And I had to quit being a people pleaser. The way she said it was, truth without love is brutality. But love without truth is people pleasing. And I had to try both spectrums to get to the middle. Today, I try not to be brutal, and I sure don't like to people please. I am not a people pleaser. I tried to do that one time with people I sponsor, and I wanted to kill them. And this program has saved our family's life. I think it saved your life because or you wouldn't be here. I think you want what I want. I want hope. I want love. I want strength to stand up and be somebody. It doesn't matter who knows that but me. When I look in that mirror, I want somebody looking back at me that loves me. She was never there for me before. This is a we program. We can't do it alone. I need every one of you. I need every one of you. Just like the other night after we got the bed set up and all that stuff, and it set up I started cleaning after I've had to get that new headboard in. It looked like 100 people had died under our bed. Because we hadn't moved our bed in so long. You get a new headboard, you vacuum and clean it out, and it's set up. I wanted to clean. I wanted to get rid of a lot of clutter. And one of the girls I sponsored came over at the house, and I'd thrown out about 4 of those big black trash bags, just a clutter stuff. And this sponsor of mine, she's going, she's helped me clean and stuff, and she's cleaned around all that clutter and stuff. She's going, "Oh, Sue, you've worked so hard. You know, it looks so good. Oh, my gosh, you've needed to do this for a long time. I'm so proud of you." And she looked at me, and she goes, "I am so proud of you. You've worked so hard." And she gave me a hug, and we started laughing. Because I'd ask Keith all day, "What do you think? How does the house look?" And he goes, "I like our new bed." She knew I needed the validation. And it dawned on her, she gave me a hug, the pats on the back, "Oh, you're a good girl," you know. And we started laughing because only another Al-Anon understands me. And that's the magic of this program. God uses people to help other people. There was a little boy one night laying in bed, and there was a thunder and hailstorm going on outside. And he got scared, and he ran in and got bed with his mom and dad. And he's laying there shivering, and his daddy cuddled him up, and he goes, "Son, what's wrong with you?" And the little boy said, "Dad, I was afraid in there. I was all alone, and it's thunder and lightning and hailing outside, and I was in there by myself, and I was all alone." And his daddy looked at him, cuddled him up more, and he said, "You weren't in there alone, son. You didn't need to be afraid. You weren't alone. God was in there with you." And the little boy looked at him, at his daddy, and he said, "I know, Daddy, but I need something with skin on it right now." And see, that's what you are to me. You're my God with skin on it. Because God uses you to talk to me. He uses my sponsor on a regular basis to get to me, to give me the answer. The long-timers. God uses the long-timers to set the pace for us. My gosh, those long-timers that were up here last night, that lady said she was with her husband. She said her husband was an Al-Anon, and he drank for 20 years into her sobriety. Wasn't my kind of Al-Anon. You see, I understand today that an Al-Anon is not just somebody that's married to an alcoholic. An Al-Anon is somebody that comes in this program, gets a sponsor, goes to meetings, and practices the 12 steps in their life. And sponsors others, passes it on. That's an Al-Anon. But it was so neat that lady said, "I had to choose. Am I going to drink with him and stay with him, or am I going to choose my recovery?" And she said, "We went home and he moved out." And I wanted to go, yes! She put her sobriety first. Because the other person there wasn't supporting her. That's what I want to be. I want to be there every time my husband says, "Do you think this is a good idea?" And I can say, "Yeah, let's go for it, babe." Or I can go, "Uh-uh, not in our home." I think we have a tremendous responsibility that those who live with sober alcoholics do not co-sign your stuff all the time. I think it is my responsibility to pay attention to my husband. He got eye surgery the other day. They offered Valium. I don't think so. And he didn't want it. I don't support that. Thank God he doesn't want that. We don't get prescriptions filled in our home that aren't just antibiotics. That's it. We support sobriety in our home. We don't drink, we don't use. Everybody in our home is sober, including me. And I'm not an alcoholic. I support sobriety. And I want to thank you today for supporting me and my recovery. I want to commend you on being here for recovery this weekend. I hope you have fun, but realize that it's a byproduct of being sober and sane. Thank you very much.